At its core, the job is about people helping people.
I grew up in Cabarrus County, so I feel a lot of ownership with this job and this service because these are my people. This is my home. You know, if I try and do a good job and in my position work to help others do a good job, one day one of them can show up and take care of me. What it boils down to is it's us. We're taking care of each other.
The worst call is not the amputation or the gunshot wound or whatever, right? It's, as a community paramedic, I sat on the side of the road crying because I had a patient who didn't have access to care that she needed. She was alone, she was poor, and I had to try and figure out how I can help her. It's terrible when you can't slap a Band-Aid on it and go, everything's cool, I'm getting you to the hospital, that's it.
I've got to see EMS from the perspective of three or four different counties as far as my career and growing up. And one thing that always stood Cabarrus aside from all the other ones was, you know, its relationship with the citizens. People don't like calling 911 because it means, oh, ambulance ride. But whenever we go out there going into people's houses when they need help, it's like we're their friends. And, you know, they look forward to seeing us in a way that means, you know, these guys got my back and they're comfortable with calling us and letting us into their homes to help them.
Each year, they respond to about 40,000 calls. Their cardiac arrest survival rates exceed national standards. They routinely earn the American Heart Association's Mission Lifeline Gold Award. They achieve all that while being the calm in chaos and staying connected to the community. As the department prepares to move into a centrally located, state-of-the-art headquarters and celebrate 50 years of service, we sat down with those who do the job daily. This is Did Y'all Hear? A Cabarrus County podcast. On this episode, we're on the front lines of compassion and care with Cabarrus County EMS. Cabarrus County, North Carolina,
America thrives here. Yeah. He can edit.
Yeah. Yeah. That's on the record, right?
But, you know, so like,
this is not a live event. Right. We can edit, we sometimes choose to.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So.
Yeah.
That's suitable for children. Yes.
Yeah.
All right, cool.
All right, so I am here with one of the most beloved departments here in Cabarrus County, and I am super excited because this is an opportunity for us to get you all story and how the work you do not only impacts our community, but impacts you all. Let's start this thing off with introduction.
My name is Jake Bryant. I'm a paramedic with Cabarrus County. I got into it because it runs in the family. My dad was a medic for almost 30 years, and I love the job.
Hi, my name is John Bell. I'm a paramedic with Cabarrus. I've been here since 2013. The military actually led me to this. I had some military training when I went through basic training in the Army, and that kind of sparked an interest.
My name is Tyler Carpenter. I've been with Cabarrus County EMS for 5 years now. I've been a paramedic for three of those years. Kind of like Jake, my father's a fireman, so first responder, grew up around it. So that's how I was exposed to it. Always been interested in medicine and the medical field, but never really knew what I wanted to go into. But since I grew up around that, I kind of knew what EMS was, went, got my EMT, loved it, and then went and got my paramedic.
I'm Justin Bryans, Deputy Chief of Administration. I started part-time back in 1998. I got into EMS kind of by accident. I wasn't looking for a career in public safety, but it was, I was 16 and started volunteering at Odell Fire Department in 1994. And that just kind of led to me getting my EMT, and that's how I ended up here part-time.
And I'm Deputy Chief Jonathan Malden. I'm the Deputy Chief of Operations. I started part-time in 2006. I've got a background in construction. I went to East Carolina and got a construction management degree there. But at the time, I was working for a construction company that our now chief worked for, and I always had an inkling and wanted to do things for other people. And, you know, he provided me with that avenue to come and sparked an interest. And I went and got my EMT while I was in college. And, when I graduated, I came back and I was working part-time here at the county. and decided and went and got my paramedic, and about midway through paramedic school made the switch to full-time with the county.
Hi, my name is Katie Curran. I'm one of the community paramedics with Cabarrus County EMS. I've been in EMS since 2000, sort of fell into EMS because I was working in a restaurant after college, and one of my coworkers said, "You have a really weird sense of humor, you should become a medic." And so I went, took an EMT class, and it's been all downhill since there. I love EMS. I'm passionate about it. It's a great career choice.
There seems to be a lot of pride among you all, among the Cabarrus County EMS employees. Can you guys speak to maybe why that is?
We're very progressive here at Cabarrus County EMS, thankful to our leadership and our medical director. I'd say we're allowed to function our full scope of practice as we can as a paramedic. And so we're able to do a lot of things that other counties are not.
The leadership here allows me to go out and do my job because they have faith in my abilities and know that I'm going to choose to do what's right for my patient. I'm going to do everything I can to stabilize them, to get them to the hospital safely, or just to hold their hand and not really do any interventions except tell them, "Hey, I'm going to take great care of you and the hospital is going to take great care of you when we get you there." Just being there for the patient, I know, is my main job, and the administration allows me to do that.
We were talking about, you know, in the office, just like I said, how challenging and hard some of the days you guys must have. And at the end of the day, how do you decompress from that?
Early on in my career, our coping mechanism was a little more intrinsic by nature because we were on 24-hour shifts and we would run a bad call. We would come back to the station where we were potentially going to be for the next 18 hours, you know, with the folks. And we would, you know, somebody mentioned earlier, kind of like the dark sense of humor sometimes, which doesn't translate well to folks who are not in this profession, but that's how we coped. Like, we would sit around and talk about it. We were a really close-knit bunch because we spent, honestly, more time every third day. I worked 24 hours, so I spent more time with some coworkers than I did my family. As we've grown and then moved to 12-hour shifts and we have newer folks coming into this profession, we realized that that was not the default method to allow people to cope, was to say, you know, we never truly said, "Suck it up, you signed up for this." Like, we didn't actually say that, but it was almost kind of understood that that was part of the job, right? Like, you know. But now we've realized that that's not how we should go, and that was really led to a more acknowledgement that we needed peer support, that we needed critical incident stress management right after a call. And they can talk about if we have a bad call. We try to do an immediate debriefing.
When we do have bad calls, I can call my coworkers and talk to them about it because either they can relate or they know what I'm going through, or they've had a call similar to that. Also, I've been lucky, as in I have a great partner I can rely on. I can bounce ideas off of him, say, "Hey, this is what I'm thinking. What are you thinking?" "Yes, I agree. Great. Let's move on with this treatment." Also, outside of work, I hang out with multiple of my coworkers, and that's a great coping mechanism.
Well, one of the things I wanted to mention too is that it's not always a bad call for folks. A lot of times, just sitting around the station or, you know, doing your daily tasks, cleaning trucks or whatever the case may be, and just having that anticipation of the tones going off and having to go run that call, you know, that can be enough to be, you know, you're sitting on go all day long, and that it could be just their sleep cycles are jacked up because they're working night shift and they're working a second job, you know, trying to make ends meet, mowing yards so they can buy a little extra, you know, nicer house or whatever the case may be. But you know, that in itself adds a layer of stress. We tend to allow these things to compound on us and not acknowledge it. What I don't want the discussion to be is, "Oh, it's got to be this really bad call for it to trigger stress and for us to deal with stress." We also are acknowledging that there's just daily stress that we need to provide outlets for our people for.
I think for the general public listening to this, you know, that's a great point. Don't ever ask a paramedic or firefighter what's the worst thing you've ever seen, because my answer to that always is you don't want to know. But maybe ask, like, what's the call where you made the biggest difference, you know, because that could be that really bad call, but we could, you know, in our mind, we've turned that into something good. Because if, to Katie's point, if I were to tell you the worst things I've ever seen, those aren't always fun for me to share, but it's also maybe not what you want to hear. So, you know, like, you know, hey, where's the call you made the biggest impact? Where did you, you know, that kind of thing. And so that, you know, just for general knowledge, I think sometimes that translates a little better for us.
You all mentioned cumulative stress, and I think that's probably the biggest challenge overall, you know, because the average quote-unquote career life expectancy for a paramedic is about 5 years. For the vast majority of people, it's not necessarily a destination career. Now, there's numerous reasons for that, but one of them is it's that the stress adds up and it accumulates. You know, an example would be if somebody does, you know, if somebody gets certified in CPR and they do chest compressions on somebody as a layperson, that's a core memory they've just built. That's a story that they'll tell for the rest of their lives. But I honestly can't tell you if I've done CPR in the past week because I just don't remember, because I've done it so many times. So the cumulative mini trauma that we experience call to call to call, we don't notice this week or next week or the week after that, but 10, 15, 20 years from now, when we haven't noticed those 25,000 little micro traumas, that can become a challenge. So the example that I can kind of draw from, I guess, because I have both perspectives, is the military. So I deployed overseas about 15, 13, I don't know, it was a long time ago. And when I was in the military, I was not in the medical field, I was in the infantry. I was a machine gunner, so kind of the opposite of what I do now. And if anybody ever has an opportunity to go to war, you should probably not do that. Find something else to do. But the experiences that I had over there, with very few exceptions, I'm never going to go to those places again. I'm never physically going to be there again. So I'm not going to be in the exact same place to be reminded of this thing happened right here. But looking out the window where we're recording right now, I can see at least 3 or 4 buildings that I've been in on calls. Not necessarily bad calls, but like I can look at that house and go, I kind of remember going in there. So if I go past a building, or I go down a road, or I go to an intersection where I had a bad call, even though it may not necessarily bother me and make me, you know, sad or anything like that, I'm going to go through that intersection and be like, I remember this terrible wreck that I had here. So the fact that I work where I live and that I serve my own people is kind of a double-edged sword, because it's great because they're my people, but it's bad because, you know, if there's a call that bothered me quite a bit, I'm going to drive down that street at some point. You know, I've been doing this long enough where I've probably been down most every street in this county. So that's a lot of little reminders.
During an evening shift, a call goes out. Traffic accident. I-85 southbound. John heads to the scene.
10-4, a better address is going to be 5450 Interstate 85 south between the 54 and the 55 in the South Valley.
A lot of times on traffic accidents, especially ones on the interstate, they're called in by passersby, so there's not a lot of information.
Right.
That my assumption is that was called in by somebody passing by and said, oh, a car went across the road and hit the guardrail. So we're going to pull all the way ahead of the incident.
Okay.
Because one of the things that our vehicles do for us is act as a shield. Well, a fire truck is a much bigger shield than a pickup truck.
John meets with the first responding crew.
What's up? Definitely worried coming around to this one because it said they went over 4 lanes. So I was like, oh no, not another critical call.
Yeah.
So the driver of the vehicle on that side, he's actually a physician, like an ED physician. Talked to him. He said no complaints whatsoever.
Yeah.
There's definitely a language barrier with these people right here.
Uh-huh.
The only one that actually did something was this guy over here. He touched his head. And then he said, oh, window. And I was like, okay. It's like, so can we help you? And he, no. So he's like very like adamant, like unless not touching him.
I mean, if everybody's adamantly refusing,
yeah,
just do the uninjured person's form.
Even on him?
If he's like, no, leave me alone, don't touch me.
Okay.
Yeah.
10-4. I just wanted to confirm that.
Yeah.
All right.
I'll do that then.
So the uninjured person's form is for situations like this. You know, we get called because it's a traffic accident, but nobody's actually hurt.
You're not transporting.
So they're not transporting. Everybody's up walking around. Nobody has any obvious injuries. Nobody wants medical attention. They weren't the people that called. So just because they're involved in a traffic accident doesn't mean they have to be patients. So the uninjured person's form is just a way for us to account for the fact that we made contact with these people. You know, looking at the damage to the cars, it looks bad, but if you don't, it looks bad because there's parts all over the place, the cars are all torn up, but really, to me, this doesn't look like a very high energy accident. You know, it's people think interstate going 60 miles an hour, everything's going to be bad, but they hit each other going 60 miles an hour in the same direction, so it's really not that huge of a transfer of energy. And modern cars are made to crash. They're designed with crashing in mind. So we show up and we see two relatively new vehicles like this. I see the front ends are all chewed up. To me, that doesn't really look bad because the car absorbed a ton of the energy that was distributed and kept it from being transferred into the patient's body. But if we showed up and that was a 69 Ford Fairlane with that same type of damage, people are going to be hurt.
So one of the things that people may not know about you all is that your jobs expand beyond just responding to a call. You guys are actually out and about in the community and doing things beyond that. So talk to us about how you stay connected to the community in a larger way.
Well, we have a community paramedic available.
That's all you...
Well, I would say the community paramedic program is great, right? But that's a very small part of what our agency does. The larger part is the constant community contact we have with CPR programs, teaching hands only from, you can learn it in 3 minutes when you walk by my station at the county fair, right? Or, you know, actually teaching classes to people that want to learn CPR. We also do, the community paramedic program does, you know, like drug take back events. So you go through your medicine cabinet and find 1,000 pills from 1986. We'll take those and dispose of them properly for you. So, you know, the fish aren't getting high in the rivers and everything when you flush it down the toilet, which you should not do. Bring them to me, the community paramedic. We also help with substance misuse issues. We try and give out, you know, there's a huge opioid crisis, opioids and fentanyl mixed together, and we try and address issues by preventing death from overdose by giving out free Narcan to patients who have substance misuse issues. You know, we are constantly out and about in the community trying to educate and trying to inform them on healthcare issues that directly impact them or may directly impact them one day, right, if they haven't already. To speak on the community paramedic program, our main goal is to try and prevent hospital readmission. We deal with 5 core patient populations that come out of the hospital after you've had a stroke, you've had coronary bypass surgery, congestive heart failure, COPD, and sepsis. Or if you've been diagnosed with one of those issues, a lot of times we will get a referral from a nurse navigator who deals with those patient populations to go out and visit with a patient in the first couple of days after they've gotten out of the hospital. When we get there, we go over, you know, safety issues within the home. We go over, you know, food insecurity. Do you have problems getting food? Are you making a choice between I can't afford my medicines and I can't afford to eat? I'm going to try and help solve that issue so you don't have to make that choice. We go over education with the patients about their medical problem and about what they can do separate from what their physician has, you know, doctors can throw pills at you all day long. But if you don't make these changes in your own personal care, you're going to end up back in the hospital.
Each day, Katie heads out into the community to prevent that very thing.
were getting ready to go see a patient of mine who actually contacted us about 2 years ago and said, I am unable to get to the lab to get blood work done because I don't have transportation. I don't have a whole lot of friends and family who can come up and take me. Are you able to come and do my lab work for me? I reached out to the lab and I said, this is the patient's situation. We do in-home labs. We'd be more than happy to come out and get her labs in her home. And that way you guys can have the results that you need to adjust medications or do whatever it is you're treating. The clinic said, yes, please go do that. They put in orders for us. We go to the patient's home, get her labs. And because I've been coming to see this woman for 2 years, we have established a fantastic relationship. I consider her not only a patient, but a friend. And, you know, for her birthday, I'll bake her a cake. She's not a diabetic, so she gets a cake. But she had an upset stomach. We talked about some things that she could do to help her upset stomach, and she had been on some medicines that, you know, may have killed some of her gut flora. So I'm trying to give her some sauerkraut to try and help her gut flora improve again. So, and we're here. Hey there.
I'm gonna tell you right now, I wished I would have known about them way before I did. Because they are fantastic. Wow. Now, I love my paramedics. They're so good, so kind, and so loving. Yeah. You know, and that makes a difference. Because there's so many people don't know what love is or kindness, you know. But they do. She's my buddy.
I told him, I said, we're friends. Like, it's not just a patient relationship.
She's my pick.
Yeah.
She's your pick.
I mean, they're all good, you know, and I love all of them. But this one, she's special.
It makes me feel really good that I'm able to offer her care that she needs to monitor her medical condition. But on a different note, it makes me feel really great that she asks about my day and asks how I'm doing and what can she do to help me. I mean, she's a super sweet and caring person too. And so we have a friendship. It's been great getting to know her.
She's a great friend as well as a great paramedic.
You all have a new facility that's opening up, pretty big deal. Can you talk about some of the training elements and how this new facility will help you all level up as an organization?
So currently we're in the same station, our headquarters, our admin staff, our training division, our logistics, you know, everything is happening in about a 3,000 square foot facility that we've been in since the mid to late 70s. Cabarrus EMS started in 1973, and I think we moved into this station in 75-ish. So about 3,000 square feet, and we're moving to about 30,000, just north of 30,000 square feet. That's going to include an amazing training space, including a very large lecture hall that can be split into two lecture halls, some breakout rooms, much like the room we're sitting in now, it'll be conference room style breakout areas. We'll have some rooms where we can, you know, adjust the layout of the room to mimic different houses, different businesses that we may go in, bathrooms, living rooms, kitchens. We'll be able to really set up a call inside of our station or let our crews come in from the outside with their stretchers, come right out of their ambulance with the stretcher into this facility, into this room, run a call, and it's all going to be, you know, we're 21st century now, right? So everything should be video recorded and played back for a debriefing so we can learn from what we did on that call. So our training's getting ready to step up to something that we have never been privy to. You know, just think about what we're doing now with what we've got and how much better our staff is going to be with the training that we're going to be able to provide them.
If you kind of asked about how it's going to help in the future, I think when our staff go into the building and understand we have our own space, our own identity, really the main corridor coming into downtown Concord right there on Cabarrus Avenue with a Cabarrus County building right there. You know, we talk about the stress of the job. You'll be able to come in and, you know, if you want to work out, even if it's just walking on a treadmill, if it's nasty outside, you have a place to do that. All those things are going to help us recruit and retain, and, you know, it's really going to be a state-of-the-art facility from the beginning. I have been in these headquarters discussions for what seems like 20 years. I mean, we literally have been talking about it for a long time. It's been in CIP for a while. We've always had support from county management as well as our elected officials, but the timing was right with this facility for location, and we couldn't ask for a better landing spot.
Well, I'd love to close this conversation on a high note. You all will be celebrating 50 years this year, which is a big deal. What does that mean for the agency?
To think back over the past 50 years about the vision that has been present with our previous administration and leadership, and to get us where we are today. And, you know, just to think, you know, how medicine does grow, where it's, you know, it changes constantly. We're doing evidence-based stuff. So John mentioned CPR, you know, 5 years from now, what will we be doing slightly different to make a big impact? Because we've come a long way in those 50 years.
I wanted to say, like, if you think about it, you know, the fire service has been around for over 200 years. Police have been around since the beginning of time. EMS has only been around, for Cabarrus EMS, 50 years, but just add 10 years to that. Yeah. So it's only been EMS, like, where it wasn't the funeral home come in to pick up a body and maybe take them to the hospital or the funeral home, we just don't know, to, hey, let's not go to the funeral home at all. Let's go to the hospital and let's stabilize this patient using all of these tools that we have. EMS is still in its infancy. And for us to be able to be as progressive and advanced as we are in a county like Cabarrus, I think the citizens need to know that, like, they're super fortunate, right? And we're super fortunate to be able to serve them in this capacity, because we've learned so much in a short period of time when you think about other public safety. We're coming right along, and hopefully we're going to continue to grow and educate ourselves into, you know, like, what's best for our patients.
That service delivery model, because we're so still somewhat in our infancy, you know, the days of, like, we had a discussion this past week at a leadership conference about response times. Like, we've set the standard at 8 minutes, but do we really need to be at every call in 8 minutes? And if not, who set that standard? And we kind of did, so that's what people expect. But, you know, medicine is changing, healthcare is changing, and our delivery model will have to change at times too, to where, you know, it may not be necessarily, like, we want to get to the cardiac arrest and the critical calls in less than 8 minutes, but it may be that we, through community paramedic and other avenues, that we have a way to plug folks in to telemedicine, or, you know, and other options, basically, to not put you in an ER to sit, you know, and wait to be seen, just to be discharged with a referral to the doctor, which we could potentially have done from the field. So, you know, staying engaged with those opportunities, and that you have our word as far as leadership goes, and I know the county administration supports, as long as we provide them the why and the data behind it, you know. So to your point, like, folks listening to the podcast, just know that we're going to take care of you the best way possible. And, you know, over the years, that the past 50 years, that's been awesome. And the next 50 will be even better. County, North Carolina, America thrives here.